As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the weekend preview on the Athletic Football Podcast, sponsored by Bet365. I'm Dan Bardell, and today myself and co-host George Ellick will preview the best of the weekend's FA Cup action alongside Bet365's Steve Freeth. Be good for you two actually to go through some FA Cup action instead of Premier League, because you two get to talk about your favourite thing, which is the EFL. George, who's obviously an expert on the EFL, and Steve, whose team that he supports, spend a lot of time in the EFL. Yeah, be good to talk about some different teams.
I don't go swanning around claiming to be an expert watching those games. I actually go to the games.
Yeah. No time, Steve.
How are we both?
I'm excellent, actually. I'm in good form. Unlike Stoke, who I've seen twice over the last few days, have been pretty average to say the least, but I was treated to Manchester City Leicester on Boxing Day, so that was an absolute belter.
Yeah, I kind of ruined your thing on Twitter where you said, guess where this is.
Everyone was going for a northern game because it was like pie gravy, you know, like they're thinking League One, League Two, or whatever. And it was Manchester City.
I couldn't resist getting involved. FA Cup third round. Have either of you got any treasured memories from the FA Cup? Because we do, you know, proper football fans, they do love the FA Cup, don't they, George?
I mean, I absolutely love it. Whenever I see fans of Premier League clubs claiming that we should abolish it and this, that, and the other, I mean, in my opinion, it is the purest form of football. And for us, fans of League One, League Two clubs, of National League clubs, and the rest, it is the opportunity to take on the best teams, even if it doesn't end too well, which is what football's all about. It's the promise of a one-off game where you're pitting yourself against a team who are better, and the goals that you score against those sides are different. They're special compared to league goals. You know, talking of treasured memories, I think the last game I went to before COVID was an FA Cup third round replay. The team I support, Oxford, we'd gone up to Newcastle, Steve Bruce's Newcastle, and saw us draw 0-0 at St James's. They came back to ours and we were 2-0 down with 5 minutes to go, and we scored twice in the last 5 minutes. And it was, you know, that's not the kind of, even when you score a last minute winner in the league, scoring twice against a Premier League side at home under the lights, there's nothing better than that. And even though Alan Saint-Maximin did what he normally does and scored an incredible goal late on in extra time to prevent us from penalties, everyone left that ground knowing they'd seen a very special game and something that is, that lives long in the memory, and little did we know that we wouldn't be going back to games for about a year or so. So I love the FA Cup. I think that that those, you know, it's normally going to be fans of top six Premier League teams who can't be bothered with it, should think about how big a day this is for those fans who are coming to that, see their team pit themselves against them, because it is pretty special. Nothing really comes close.
Yeah, and you must have some memories over your checkered football history, Steve.
I'm still scarred, Dan, from 1991. When Woking came to the Albion, the Hawthorns third round, Brian Talbot and Sam Allardyce were in charge, and it was expected to be a comfortable victory against the Cards. And we actually won the lot from a corner. Colin West got a header, 1-0 at half time. You're thinking, well, job done, banker on the coupon. Unfortunately, there's a certain Tim Bazzaglo that had an absolute field day against, I think it was Gary Strider and Graham Roberts. You'll remember him from being a great defender back in the day. And he got a hat-trick in 15 minutes and we ended up losing 4-2. And did the fans riot? No. They went on the pitch. They lifted up Tim Bazzaglo onto their shoulders and paraded him round the ground as like some sort of hero, even though we've been absolutely embarrassed. So I still can't shake that one off, but I'm sure that's great memories for Woking fans as well, which was a great day for them. Not so good for the Albion, and Talbot and Allardyce were sacked quite swiftly afterwards.
Yeah, I was saying to you both yesterday, when I think of the FA Cup third round, I just think of just dreaming of not getting Manchester United in the FA Cup third round, because we just always get them.
Yet again.
So I don't know exactly how many times it's been, but it feels like it's been a lot of times in my lifetime. Villa get Manchester United in the FA Cup third round.
At least it's always on TV, so you don't have to, you know, you'd have to get off the sofa.
Yeah. Well, I've got memories of being 2-0 up, heading into the fourth round, and then Manchester United bring on Ruud van Nistelrooy and him just scoring a hat-trick in 5 minutes or something, or 10 minutes or whatever it was, something stupid, and we're on our way. I think I might have even cried.
Maybe that was
game.
Fate, Dan, for about... clearly, you weren't around. Even I weren't around in 57, where I think Peter McParland, wasn't it? I think he got a couple of goals in that game, and the goalkeeper was kind of in the back of the net, I think, and had to be... And I think an outfield player had to go in nets for Manchester United that day. Maybe it's a bit of payback from 57.
Well, we've not had much luck since 1957 because we haven't won any FA Cup since then. Now, I said to you yesterday as well, even when Villa, even when Man U didn't enter the competition because they decided they weren't going to enter it 1 year because of the World Club Cup, we got the lucky loser that would have been them. So, and we only scraped past them. I think it was Darlington. We only scraped past them 2-1 as well. So, yeah, we just can't seem to avoid Manchester United. And yet again, we have them this year in the third round. Let's look at these fixtures then, step away from memory lane. The first one is Swindon v Man City, Friday at 8 o'clock. Steve, Man City, 10 points clear at the top. Did they impress you over the festive period? They've actually gone and made the title race quite boring now, haven't they?
Yeah, I think we were expecting a three-horse race, guys, weren't we, at the start of it? It wasn't that long ago that Chelsea were 2-1 for the title when they beat Leicester, I think it was, in November. And Liverpool were 9-4 after touching... 9-4 after Divock Origi's late winner at Molineux. But all of a sudden, you know, City have just bounded clear. 12-1 on they are now to win the league. 11-10 to win the title by 10 points or more. They won it by 12, I think, last season. But as we said at the top there, going to that game on Boxing Day, the first 25 minutes when City just absolutely blitzed them, I thought it was going to be a record score. I thought it was going to be 10 goals scored by one team in the Premier League for the first time in history. But I'll tell you what, I'll give Leicester City some credit, and Brendan Rodgers, the way they set up, even though they were 2 or 3 down, they kept going for it and they had plenty of turnovers. They were pressing. James Maddison was fantastic on the break as well. He ended up having 6 shots on that in that game. No surprise that he scored. He could have scored a lot earlier. Iheanacho as well had 3 shots on target. They made a real game of it. Clearly, the games against Brentford and Arsenal weren't as comfortable, but I suppose they ground it out, and that's what champions do.
Does Pep deserve credit for the fact that it says that they haven't got a striker? I mean, they have got a lot of world-class players, so I'm not sure he deserves a massive amount of credit because their squad is unbelievable despite the striker shortage. But to have moved away so clear, I guess, you know, Liverpool and Chelsea are incredible teams, so to move away and be this clear already, it does speak volumes.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think we have to, before giving Man City too much credit for what they've done over the festive period, we have to acknowledge that Chelsea and Liverpool had quite a big part to play in the title race seemingly ending over the period of a couple of weeks, from dropping plenty of points, while City did enough to get over the line in a few games where they weren't at their most impressive. You know, certainly Brentford were able to set up in a way where they didn't really look to attack too much, but they were able to frustrate City. And then in the Arsenal game, which I think we're going to talk about in a second, I thought Arsenal were quite clearly the better team until it was 10 against 11. So, I mean, of course, Pep deserves credit. And, you know, one of the things I think he deserves the most credit for is we talk about how they don't have a recognised striker. Well, they do, but he's playing a right wing in Gabriel Jesus, who's having a brilliant season and looks a completely different player to what we've seen previously, and is a key part of this side now. And they're able to rotate between him and Mahrez. They're able to rotate between Grealish and Foden. They have so many options. And whoever they play in that false nine role, they never really look particularly convincing. I think Bernardo Silva is the one who looks best when he plays there, or possibly Gundogan. But none of them ever seem to really be the key player on the pitch, but it doesn't matter because the players surrounding them are so good and are so well drilled in their roles that they are just a winning machine. So yes, Pep deserves credit. Would they be a much better side with a striker in there? It would be a different side, so who knows. I think the way they're set up at the moment enables them to get the best out of Foden, to get the best out of De Bruyne, who's coming back into form now. Grealish is clearly the one who still needs to step up, but I have no doubt that that will happen. Players who play for Pep often need a bit of time to get up to speed in terms of what's being demanded of them, and his role at Aston Villa in terms of being the key player, the player that they wanted to get on the ball as often as possible, often having a couple of players doubling up on him, has completely changed now, where he is one small cog in a big machine. So I'm sure that will come, but yeah, I mean, they are a breathtakingly good footballing side, and they are they're champions elect now. I can't really see how any other eventuality would happen. I can't see how they would drop the points needed to bring the other two back into it.
Well, another side that's been described as a good footballing side is Swindon Town, George. Described as the best footballing side in League Two, possibly even League One if you were to include those teams as well. Tell us about the job Ben Garner is doing, George.
He's done a magnificent job. He's a previous youth team coach who got the job at Bristol Rovers last season, a very well regarded coach at the time. For whatever reason, you know, he came in at a difficult time just before the COVID break at Bristol Rovers and did not do a good job, and it culminated in their relegation into League Two. And he left with, you know, most Bristol Rovers fans when he got the job at Swindon. Their rivals, well, yeah, I mean, their rivals from down the road, albeit not their biggest rivals, that belongs to my team. They were telling Swindon fans not to be particularly happy with the appointment, but he's proven in his short time there so far that he is a very talented coach. And for Swindon Town as well, who in the summer looked to be on the brink of oblivion, to be honest, under their previous owner, Clem Morfuni, an Australian businessman, bought them just in the nick of time and has invested very wisely in terms of the playing squad and the and the off-field coaching staff as well, including Ben Garner. And they went from being one of the favourites for relegation to now being promotion challengers. And Garner has done this playing a really attractive brand of attacking football. They look to get the ball down wherever possible. They've got plenty of technically gifted players. Johnny Williams, who many people will remember from spells in the Premier League, is at Swindon. Jack Payne as well, who played for Huddersfield in the Premier League, I think, as well. Louis Reed's a very technical deep line midfielder too. Ben Gladwin. These are all players who, the only way they know how to play is to get it down and to play. So that can often be a dangerous mentality against Manchester City. You know, we saw how Brentford, a team who on their day can play it as well, look just completely shut up shop. There's very little chance of Swindon looking to do that at all. I would have thought they're going to look to play their own game. And as laudable as it may be, and I have no doubt that people who watch this game on Friday night are going to come away being impressed with Swindon, I'm not necessarily sure that will translate into a favourable scoreline for them.
What's your tip then, George?
Yeah, my tip here is, as I say, I think Swindon will come out of this with credit, but I think City at 12 on are looking to me like, you know, we've got to find a way to get with them. And often the way to do that is Man City to win both halves. And I'm going to add to that Man City to win the match by three or more goals. So a bet builder. So City to win both halves and City minus two at 10 to 11. Because I do think Swindon will play their own game. They'll look to play the way they normally do. But yeah, I'm not necessarily sure that is the way to play against the Pep Guardiola side, and they might be picked off.
Yeah, Joy, I agree with you there, George. I'm surprised that it was given. He's quite lucky. It's probably to get another gig. But speaking to people who have worked with him previously, he's a massively ambitious manager, a new breed of manager by all accounts. Sessions and drills are fantastic. Video analysis as well. He's top draw. And he's been travelling around the top clubs as well, getting tips from all the top managers as well, so I believe. So it's certainly looking good for Swindon as well. I think they have the highest possession in League Two as well. So I'm looking forward to this. It's certainly going to be an entertaining game, you would have thought.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Game two is Millwall v Crystal Palace, Saturday lunchtime, a London derby, Steve. I like the look of that one. That should be a good tie, shouldn't it?
Yes, I'm hopeful. And you know what? Could this be Crystal Palace's year?
They've got good history with the FA Cup, haven't they?
Well, they've got some
history with the FA Cup.
They have some history, but you know what? They've never won it. They've got to the final a couple of times. 1990, I'll remember as my age, certainly doing that. And 2016, I think, where they lost to United after extra time. United again, FA Cup, we keep talking about it. But I think this could be a fantastic year for them. I think it's a great chance to go for it. 16-1 to be relegated and 50-1 to win the FA Cup. They're sitting in mid-table with 23 points. I think a bit of a concern is the way that they've conceded goals recently. And this will certainly be I wouldn't say a spicy tie. I think it'd be a decent atmosphere as well. They have been conceding a few goals, but they did have 22 shots, I think, Palace, against the Hammers in that defeat when chasing the game as well. They've lost a couple of players to the AFCON as well. So, and it's Brighton and Hove Albion next for them as well. So that's another massive game. But I do see this as a great chance. And I can see Crystal Palace going quite deep in this competition.
Oh, that's a good shout, you know, because I've enjoyed watching Crystal Palace this season. Every time I've watched them, they've entertained me. They're always in the game. I know they went 3-0 down, but then they're still finding their way back into the game against West Ham. They just feel like they're always in the game, and I feel like they could be a good cup side this season. Michael Olise continues to impact games from the bench, George. He'll probably get a chance to start, you would think, in the FA Cup, wouldn't he? Because he hasn't had many starts since he's joined Crystal Palace.
Yeah, it's a bit of a surprise. They obviously have a wealth of attacking talent, and Wilfried Zaha is an automatic pick, and then RU seems to be the one that Patrick Vieira is starting at the moment, and Abarrieze in there too. But it's probably not a bad thing. You know, he's a very young player. He only kind of burst onto the scene properly last season. So for him to be given time to settle in is probably the right way to develop what is an incredibly exciting talent. And games like this are where he should probably come to the fore, because, you know, this is a game against a championship side where he excelled last season. The pressure somewhat off, but getting first team minutes in what is still an important tie is important. But he's an incredible player. His ball striking ability, it's something I said a lot last season. It's not something you often talk about with players, but the way that he strikes a football, the technique that you see when he hits it, is so impressive. His delivery's fantastic. He's got an eye for goal as well. He's one of those players who you can't stand off him because he will take you on, and because he'll kill you with his passing. And if you press him, he'll skip past you as well. So Palace did very well to get him. He's the kind of player that realistically teams at the top end of the Premier League, in my opinion, should have been going after. But as we often see, it normally takes that one move in between before you know, these teams would rather pay a premium, having seen quite obvious generational talent perform for that club in between the two, rather than going straight to the Championship and getting him. But I'm incredibly excited to see that he's made such a good start to his Palace career, and I'm sure it'll continue.
Yeah, I understand you want to highlight Jed Wallace of Millwall.
Yeah, Jed we're not necessarily sure if he's going to start here, because there's a lot of speculation over his current transfer position. His contract's out at the end of the season. It looks likely that he's going to be moving on. There's talk that Nottingham Forest are trying to buy him, basically pay a cut price fee, or Besiktas are being linked as well, who can obviously approach him, given they can come in. UK clubs cannot. But he's an unbelievable player. What he's done at Millwall over the past few seasons is so impressive. Incredibly fast, with an eye for goal, and laying on plenty of goals as well. His importance to Millwall over the last few seasons has been so impressive. So yeah, I'm hopeful that he gets his move. I must say, as a fan of his, I always assumed that when he got his move, it would be to a Premier League club. So Forest would do very well to sign him. But I think if he does play here, if the speculation isn't too much, then this is an opportunity for him to put himself in the shop window for Premier League clubs as well.
Steve, what's your tip for this game?
Yeah, I'm going to keep it simple, Dan. Palace are around even money to win this game. I think they'll do that. And I am throwing a dart on the Eagles winning their first ever FA Cup, just like Leicester did last year. So Eagles to win for me.
The next game we're going to look at is Hull City v Everton, which is Saturday at 5:30. For anyone who hasn't followed Hull's journey since their relegation from the Premier League, the Athletic's Phil Buckingham is on hand to fill us in.
No club in English football has now been up for sale for longer than Hull City. The current chairman, Asim Alam, declared in 2014 that he would gladly relinquish control after his attempts to rebrand the club as Hull Tigers were blocked by the Football Association. "I will give it away. Out means out," he famously said at a time Hull City was still a Premier League club. Only it has not been quite so straightforward. A string of prospective new owners have shown serious interest, but none have been able to conclude a deal across a timeline spanning close to 8 years. Adjun Ilikali, the Turkish businessman and TV celebrity, hopes to be the one to add a full stop to this protracted story. He made it known as far back as the summer that he was keen to buy Hull City and formally entered into a period of exclusivity with the Alam family in late October. The process has since dragged out longer than either party had hoped, but Ilikali announced on New Year's Eve his belief a takeover would soon be completed. Most supporters will welcome a new owner with open arms. Discord and unrest have pockmarked the recent history of Hull City, and only with a fresh start can the club begin to shed the apathy that has taken hold. For all that the club has achieved in their 11-year rule, for most, the Alam family have overstayed their welcome.
Georgia, trials and tribulations at Hull.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a turbulent time for as long as I can remember, really, at Hull. And I think fans are hopeful that this takeover, with a man who I've seen described as the Turkish Simon Cowell, could be the start of a new era for them. You know, the relationship with the Alam family hasn't been good for a long time. The prospective new owner supposedly announced the takeover on the Turkish version of The Voice over the weekend as well. The one thing I would say, I'm no expert here, but I know that the EFL are, under Rick Parry, trying to change the way that owners are able to buy clubs, and often these takeovers are taking a bit longer than the prospective owners and the fan bases would want. So I would maybe urge a bit of caution here as to whether this is going to be imminent, but the new owner's given interviews in the past couple of months suggesting that he wants to fill Hull with Turkish players and Turkish managers. Not very good news that for Grant McCann. They've been linked already to Burak Yilmaz, which I can't really imagine happening, but you know, those are the kind of rumours we're likely to see here. So interesting times ahead. And I think, you know, it's a similar one to the Newcastle situation, where myself, as somebody who, you know, I have an affinity to all EFL clubs and I want them all to do well, I approach this with some caution, as you should with all prospective new owners, especially if they don't have a direct tie to the football club in terms of being a fan. But I think for Hull fans, they are so happy to be finally potentially seeing the back of the Alam ownership that they are incredibly excited about what the future could hold.
Sounds like chaos to me. But if they're happy, that's good. Yeah. I want the Hull fans to be happy, but it does sound like it could be an absolute car crash to me. Now, Steve, back in 2020, Hull were 200-1 to get relegated from the Championship. And I believe a few people had Bet365's pants down.
I think it was an interesting thing, really, Dan. I think we did have our trousers pulled down, yeah. And I think it was just the foresight of people that, I mean, this was a Hull side that had gone to Craven Cottage and won 3-0 earlier in the season. They went to Hillsborough on New Year's Day and Jarrod Bowen got the winner, and they were challenging for a playoff spot. So, you know, people weren't really thinking, a lot of people weren't thinking about the Tigers being relegated, and we were 200-1 for that. There's no doubt about it. Then, of course, it's a January transfer window and Grzycki and Bowen have scored 22 goals in the Championship between them. And all of a sudden, there were talks about them going, and clearly, you know, they left the football club, which didn't leave them in a particularly great place. And you know what? They won one game for the remainder of the season. I was at the Bet365 for the final game before lockdown when Stoke beat them 5-1. I'm not exaggerating. It could have been 10 that day. And even when we returned from lockdown and they got a last-minute winner against Borough, I thought, well, maybe Hull might get out of it. They might survive. But then Albion beat them 4-2. And the final nail in the coffin was the fact that Wigan, who were relegated with a 12-point deduction, they beat them 8-0, 7-0 at half-time. They're just completely, completely down tools. So, and you know, fair play, they came back the season after and it was fantastic what they've done. But it was just an incredible gamble landed, really.
I remember texting my Not The Top 20 co-host and host of the Athletic Tactics podcast, Ali Maxwell, saying, a Hull price to go down at 200-1. And he replied saying, nah, mate, you know, they're too far clear. And I was like, ah, and didn't back them. And then they lost and they were 150-1. And I was like, well, I missed the 200s now. I'm not going to back them. And then they were 100-1. And I was like, I've missed 150s now. Yeah. And I never got on.
It's horrible, George, isn't it? When you miss the boat, you're so stubborn.
But who's, I know.
You just don't want to.
I've
missed it.
Who's greedy enough?
I've missed the 200. I'm not getting
exactly.
Involved. I do not want a 150-1 winner.
Too long.
No, thank you.
I
missed it.
I know. But it's all Ali's fault. So there you go.
Yeah, well, we've touched on Jared Bowen there. Keane Lewis Potter, George. Potentially the new Jared Bowen?
Yeah, there have been a lot of comparisons between the two and, you know, understandably so. They're both wide forwards. They've both got a great eye for goal. Keane Lewis Potter is, you know, that there are probably five or ten players in the EFL who I can say with absolute confidence will be Premier League footballers in 2 or 3 years' time. And Keane Lewis Potter is definitely one of those. He is a brilliant player, somebody who is probably a bit less direct in terms of the way that he carries the ball than Bowen. Bowen's one of those players who gets on the ball and as soon as he gets it, you know that he's basically going to drive at goal and try and get a shot off. Lewis Potter scores a lot of goals. He's creative as well. He's remarkably good in the air for somebody who isn't A, particularly experienced, and B, doesn't have the physique of someone who you'd expect to be dominant in the air. But he's an exciting player. He struggled in the first couple of months of this season to make the step up to Championship level, although he was part of the side who came down before. But he's an exciting talent and somebody who I think could use this as a platform to really make his mark. And you know, having seen what Bowen's done at West Ham, he will believe that his destiny is to at least follow in his footsteps and possibly even go further.
Everton's, Dave. I mean, we've spoke about them a few times on this podcast this season. Well, just worrying times, bit of a toxic atmosphere, feels like it's only going to go one way. Does Wayne Rooney look more and more like the manager they might need to replace Rafa Benitez?
I'd have laughed at that comment, Dan, a few months ago, I have to say. I saw Derby last week against Stoke. I thought they were a better side. I thought they were looked like a side that were challenging for the playoffs, in all honesty. And I'd seen them again at the Albion when Davis and Jagielka were rolling back the years, just heading and kicking and just being really well organised, I thought, in what they did. I think on the flip side of that, Dan, I think it's very easy to play at the moment for Derby with no pressure on them whatsoever. Everyone's expecting them to go down. So I think it's... And plus, players, I'm interested to see what business they, you know, Derby, and what the type of players that Rooney loses in the window, because a lot of players seem to be playing, you know, and they could easily go in January as well. Do I think Rooney's a right appointment? It would certainly unite the fans, I have to say, as you mentioned, in a toxic atmosphere currently at Goodison Park. But I think, no, it wouldn't be an appointment for me. It would be a romantic one. It would unite the fans, but that wouldn't be the one that I'd be looking for right now, because I still think Rooney's got a lot to do.
Yeah, there was an interesting interview in The Athletic in the week where Alan Shearer interviewed Wayne Rooney, and I think he'd probably stay quite loyal to Derby. I think even if Everton came in, I think he'd stay to the end of the season. I think that's the way it came across to me in that interview. But if you haven't read that, do go and read it, because it's a really interesting piece. Alan Shearer interviewing Wayne Rooney. George, how do you see Hull v Everton playing out?
Yeah, I always think the ties like this are interesting from a betting perspective in the FA Cup third round, because you've got a side in Hull who, despite, you know, having a tricky start to the season, come into this in pretty good form in the Championship. And then you've got Everton who are, you know, clearly coming to this in the middle of something of a crisis. And often, I think, the odds can therefore overreact to what are the perceived trajectories of the clubs. And I think that might be the case here. Hull are 3-1 to win this. Everton 19-20. When you look at the two sides and the players at their disposal and even the managers, there is daylight between these two sides, even if in their respective leagues they are performing very differently. The 19-20, I think, is value about Everton. But I'm going to go for Dominic Calvert-Lewin to score first at 4-1. You know, we saw him make his return to the sides over Christmas. We saw him miss the penalty, of course, but there is no doubt at all that he is a prolific goal scorer against far better defences than the one that Hull are going to be able to put up, even though Hull have some decent championship level defenders, in my opinion, and some promising ones at that. We know that Calvert-Lewin is going to be playing in order to get back to fitness. He may not play the 90, but in terms of first goal scorer market, he should be on the pitch when they score their first goal. He should be on penalties as well. So I think Everton are the value here, and I think in Calvert-Lewin we've got a player who is quite clearly the most likely player to score. The class player on the pitch, and at 4-1 seems big to get that first goal.
I want to talk about Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Really, in my bad books, went early on him on fantasy football. I did think
fantasy football.
I really thought it was clever. Unbelievable. I thought that was such a good shout, and then when I got the penalty, I was like, "Yes, come on, great shout!" And then he
double game week. Ouch.
Unacceptable. If you're listening, Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I'm going to go against you as well, George. I'm calling Cupset for that one.
Okay. This is what I think. Often people can get. There are some in there. I mean, generally, I like siding with the EFL sides, but I think sometimes the odds are too caught up in the narrative around the differences of fortunes of clubs. When you kind of forget that actually, you know, the quality of the sides is a further apart than the odds suggest. But we'll see. I'll drop you a text on Saturday afternoon when Everton go 2-0 up.
I'm calling it. That's going in my accumulator to win that tie. Next game we're going to look at is West Ham v Leeds, all Premier League tie, 2:15 on Sunday. Boring all Premier League in the FA Cup. But Leeds have won a game. What's that done to their relegation odds, Steve?
Yeah, big sense of relief, Dan, wasn't it, for Bielsa? You saw him on the touchline as well. And their three previous Premier League wins have just been by one goal margins as well. Against the sides of a generally struggling Watford and Norwich, I'll say, and also Palace as well. So that late Dan James goal would have been settled the nerves, I would have thought, for him. And after 23 shots, they certainly deserved the win. But they're a big old price for relegation, Dan. They're 4-1 for the drop. So, we still think there's a big chance of them staying in the division. And that's probably down to the fact that Norwich are now 1-16. Watford look bang in trouble at 8-15. And maybe it's Burnley's time at 4-6 as well, but God knows how many times have we said that before. I know they've got games in hand, Burnley, but you know they've only won one game all season. And the interest that we've seen in Newcastle as well, the signing of Trippier, and whether there'll be a few more signings coming through the door up there on Tyneside. So we've eased them slightly from evens to 11-10 as well. So it's looking okay for Leeds United.
Yeah, it was a happy new year for Manuel Lanzini, George, dancing through the Crystal Palace defence. He wasn't in the team at the start of the season, but every time I've watched him, I think he's a great player.
I mean, he is. I think that Lanzini first goal against Palace was one of my favourite goals of the season. Only did it last that way for a couple of games before Mateo Kovacic did what he did. But Lanzini's a player who I think it's only injury that has prevented him from getting that next move. Now, you know, West Ham fans will feel like that's a bit disrespectful to them. In terms of pure talent, technical ability to impact games in the final third, there aren't many players better than him. I easily could have seen him getting a move to a City, to a Liverpool, had he stayed fit. And, you know, he's now probably he's certainly at a stage of his career where those kind of teams aren't going to be looking to sign a player of his age. I mean, he's not necessarily old, but you're not going to see them come in for a 28-year-old and spend the kind of money that West Ham are going to want for him, especially with his injury record. So West Ham are onto a winner here. They've got a player who is top four, top six level technical ability, who's now fit and firing. He can create, he can score. He's so tidy on the ball, so rarely gives it away, whilst also having that creative spark as well. So, there's always that conversation. West Ham fans will say they finished sixth last season, so they shouldn't count. But who is the best player outside the big six, the top six? And I think Lanzini, when he's fit, has a shout in that sphere. Not just recency bias after that incredible goal. Anyone who hasn't seen it, I would recommend going to have a look at it. The feet, the poise and the finish. A beautiful player to watch and an amazing goal.
And Steve, the bookies aren't confident of a top four finish for West Ham, despite all the brilliant work they've done over the last couple of years. They've got the Europa League as well, which would obviously be a passage through to the Champions League. Do they need to go for the FA Cup?
I mean, they're 11-2, Dan, for the top four. They're quite a way behind Manchester United, Arsenal
Why are they way behind Manchester United? I had this debate on the Totally Football Show on Monday. People kind of scoffed at me for suggesting that West Ham are just as likely to finish in the top four as Manchester United.
Yeah, well, you can take the value, Dan, for 11-2 and go against our models, can't you? And then you can make a few quid like people did with Hull not so long ago. But yeah, I think as we talked about Palace, I mean, they're 20-1 West Ham for the FA Cup, sorry. It's 1980, the time that they last won it. I remember watching that going down memory lane again, a sunny day, Trevor Brooking, stupid header. Yeah, the Willie Young should have been sent off for that tackle on Paul Allen. But I also went to the 2006 final with the Steven Gerrard one, and I got out of my seat to leave at 3-2 in injury time. And of course, Gerrard hit that howitzer, and then I was back in my seat, just as Shaka, his luck, was picking the ball out the net. So, I think it's a good time for the Hammers to go for this. I don't think they're playing the Europa till March, which is probably around the fifth round time, I think, as well. I think they've only lost Benrahma to the African Cup of Nations as well. They might need some defensive reinforcements, but I think this is I think West Ham fans would love a decent cup run.
Yeah, and what's your tip for the game, Steve?
I'm going for goals, Dan. Hopefully two sides like Leeds and West Ham will hopefully go for it. Admittedly, there'll be changes and we're going to wait on team news with COVID, etc., as is the way these days. But I'm going to go for over 2.5 goals. And the last cup game between these two ended 7-0. So I'm not expecting that, but I would love 7 goals. That would be a fantastic spectacle.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Right then, before we continue with the podcast, please remember that if you are going to have a bet this weekend, make sure that you do so responsibly. George, you've got some helpful tips on how to make sure that we do just that.
Yeah, it's important to us that the listeners of this podcast are in control of their gambling. This is a podcast for those who are 18 years of age and older. Please ensure that you are only staking what you can afford to lose, and do visit begambleaware.org for any information to ensure that you're gambling responsibly.
Next game, Nottingham Forest v Arsenal, Sunday tea time. Now, I'm not just doing this because our producer is an Arsenal fan and I do enjoy listening to him get angry and watching him get angry on Twitter about Arsenal.
I was amazed at his anger.
I'm calling Cupset Forest v Arsenal. Steve Cooper's Nottingham Forest, George. Pretty tasty under Steve Cooper since he's come in, and I think Arsenal could come unstucker.
Yeah, they have been. I mean, Steve Cooper's come in and done a phenomenal job early on in his time as manager. They do come into this game off the back of two defeats. They lost 2-0 away at Chris Wilder's Middlesbrough, and then they lost 1-0 at home to Huddersfield in a game where they missed plenty of chances. So it's not quite as rosy at Forest as it was a couple of weeks ago, but certainly under Cooper they are a very good side. They are solid. They have an array of attacking talent who will certainly cause Arsenal problems. Brennan Johnson is a player. You know, I mentioned those 5 or 10 players who will play in the Premier League. Brennan Johnson is one of those. There will be interest in him in January. It'll be, I'm sure, rebuffed by Forest, who still think they have a chance of getting into the top six and playing Premier League football themselves next season. They'll do everything they can to keep him. Keenan Davis, a player that you know well, has just gone there on loan till the end of the season. If he can stay fit, he should be very, very good at that level. But it's always the case with him is, can he stay fit? And the answer is normally no. Philip Zinchenogl, another one who probably has the talent and quality to play top flight football. So yeah, I mean, they will have the tools to trouble Arsenal. But if Arsenal, I mean, I know there are players missing and there are likely to be a couple rested as well. But if Arsenal turn up and play the way they did in the first half against Manchester City on New Year's Day, then I can't see Forest having enough to cause them too many troubles, because on that, I thought personally on that day they were absolutely superb.
The reason I'm calling Cupset is the midfield area. So Partey and Mohamed Elneny are off to AFCON, Steve.
Yeah.
Maitland-Niles is about to join Roma on loan, which feels quite weird to shift to central midfield player when you don't have any central midfield players. So that leaves Granit Xhaka, who just does Granit Xhaka things, as we saw at the weekend. They're quite short in there now.
Were they linked with Dougie Louise?
Yeah, I'm not sure there's anything in that, though. Yeah, they have been linked with him.
Yeah, so there's him. Even, I know he's not young, but Coutinho as well, I suppose, that seems to be touted around a lot of clubs, a lot of big clubs, and Aston Villa as well.
I knew. I think he might be coming to Villa, Steve, if the Steven Gerrard effect.
No, and Renato Sanchez as well. He's another player that's also been linked as well. So, yeah, you can understand that Arsenal need to have some recruitment there in that area as well as the centre-forward department as well. So, but it all looking very good for them after that first half. You know, Gabriel's rush of blood. Guys, answer me one thing quickly. Why do fans applaud their players when they are sent off? It makes no sense whatsoever to me in the slightest. In fact, it gets me a little bit frustrated.
Yeah, there's been two recently. There was Jimenez against Man City for Wolves, which was an absolutely stupid sending off, and he got applauded off, and I could not believe that.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, that's...
When Brunty got sent off against your lot, in the 80th minute, people are standing up and applauding. I'm thinking, hang on, is this not a playoff set for me? Are we not hamstrung
here?
You know, admittedly, it's showing support. It's the tribalism of showing the support for your team.
It makes no sense. Fans get so cross.
It utterly makes no sense whatsoever.
Fans get so cross about the most inane things, yet someone does something that is catastrophic in getting sent off and they get applauded.
It's weird how you never see a player getting sent off and then the whole stadium just roundly turning on them.
Well, maybe it's the Cantona effect. Since Eric Cantona did what he did, no one wants to have a go at players getting sent off. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. What are the top four odds for Arsenal at the moment, Steve? Because they did give it a good go against Manchester City. I was actually really, really impressed with them.
Impressed. First half, they limited Manchester City to not a great deal. They scored. Saka's goal was great. It was a great move. You know, they had shots on target. They had further chances. They're into 15-8, the same price as Spurs and Manchester United well. So it's absolutely game on there. And you're thinking with the so-called decline of or taking time for Rangnick to get his feet under the table, then why can't Arsenal challenge for the top four?
Well, the title race looks over, as we said earlier. It's that battle for fourth, actually, that might be the most interesting thing that happens.
It's the fourth spot that's going to make it more entertaining. And the relegation race could be over soon as well. So that's probably the most interesting race of the season that's remaining.
And what's your prediction for this one, Steve?
Yes, it's an interesting one. You know, we'll have a centre-half from a set-piece, Dan.
I've been waiting for this all show, to be honest, for there to be something like this.
You'll have to bear with me on this. You'll have to, because it's contrived to say the least. Rob Holding, right, has been on my radar since God knows when, right? He was actually involved in the goal that Per Mertesacker scored in their 4-2 defeat at the City Ground back in 2018, right? He hit the post, Mertesacker bundled it over. Holding has scored one goal for Arsenal since, just one, against Nottingham Forest in the EFL Cup in 2019. Now, many a chance has come and gone since. He's done this, he's hit the post, the keeper saved it. Rob Holding, from a set piece, anytime against Forest this weekend. I'm holding out for a hero, Dan.
You've done some serious research to come up with that stuff that you've just spilled off there, Steve. Next up, Manchester United v Aston Villa. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to call cup set. Manchester United are going to knock Villa out. That's what I think. Because has Rangnick really improved anything at Old Trafford, George?
Not really. It's been a pretty shambolic start to his short reign. I think there are two ways of looking at this. I think the role of interim manager is different to the role of manager. And I wonder whether or not Ralph Rangnick sees this as being an audition for the main job. If he does, it's not going particularly well. But if you're an interim manager, you would think your job is to basically get a club back on the straight and narrow. Because if the plan is to hire a manager in the summer, unless you are going to hire a manager who wants to play in this exact way, it doesn't seem to be the right means of getting players on side and you know, sorting out the mess that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer left. So there is that, and I think that it's basically impossible to argue that Rangnick is employing the right set of tactics and the right mentality in order to get this Manchester United side and this Manchester United squad performing at the highest possible level. Having said that, I think some of the blame has to lie with the players. And it's something we spoke about here on this podcast many times under Ollie's reign, where the club itself had fallen into a state of complacency, which I think we're still seeing now, where a manager comes in and immediately starts asking questions of the players and demands a different work ethic. And we're seeing so many quotes now in the press across the whole media of players talking about how they're not particularly impressed with Ranić. The ultimate insult, seemingly, within football circles, of where some of them, shock, had to Google him to find out who he was. And all of this stuff. Whereas, you know, the buck has to stop with the players at some point. You know, this group of players have to perform at a higher level. You can't just down tools when you're not impressed with the manager who's got such a reputation amongst football. You know, this isn't a guy who's been plucked from obscurity and been promoted to a big job previously. The whole club is in a state where it needs to be woken up effectively. And in my mind, if I was a Manchester United fan, I would look at those players who are seemingly more keen to speak to those in the press and leak stories about not being particularly happy with what's going on at Manchester United, rather than knuckling down and trying to work and trying to improve things, as being the ones that you need to get rid of in order to start again afresh next season. Because at the moment, whether or not the performances are worse than they were before, it feels like United are almost further away from being the stable, successful club now than they were at the end of Ollie's tenure. I definitely don't think the wrong decision was made to change manager, but there needs to be some soul searching at the club now to work out how to get into a position where this is a football club that the best managers in world football will look at in the summer and say, yes, I want to go there. This is a squad of players who are all pulling together in order to wanting to return to past glories. Because at the moment, there still seems to be a massive fracture between the playing staff, the coaching staff and the fans. And that can't be healthy.
Let's talk about someone who I'm sure you'd like to talk about, Steve. Someone who'd probably be involved in a tip at some time in the near future for you. Phil Jones had a long awaited return to the Manchester United starting 11. What a man.
Yeah, I'm not going to tip him up to score against your boys, Dan. I will be actually going to this game as well on Monday, which I'm really looking forward to.
Hospo?
Phil Jones.
Oh, it's always Hospo. Always the Hospo.
Yeah, we'll move on. Yeah, Phil.
There's you at the top of the podcast making it sound like you're the one who goes to games the whole time and I'm sitting on the sofa. You just get wined and dined whilst I'm working, watching highlights, having to trawl through highlights.
I have played to get in a few games this season.
Oh, well done you.
I can't remember too many, but I have. listen, going back to Phil Jones' topic, absolutely brilliant to see him come through unscathed and put in such an impressive showing after being out for so long. I can't imagine what he's gone through physically and mentally to get back on the football pitch. You know, 3 tackles, 2 interceptions, 3 blocks, best pass completion rate of Manchester United on the night, 4 progressive passes. Unfortunately for him, you know, no clean sheet, but massive step forward for him. He's still relatively quite young as well. He's like 29, isn't he, as well? So hopefully there's a lot of football ahead of Phil Jones after all the stick he's taken. And good luck to the fella. I hope he kicks on and has a good few years ahead of him.
Your age ratings are very fluid on today's podcast, Dave. I'm sure you've early on in the podcast, someone was 29 and you were saying that they were old and then now suddenly Phil Jones is quite young at 29.
It's a narrative, isn't it? You've got to do that. I'm quite a young 49, Dan, as well, by the way.
We can see. We see it every week on the Zoom, Steve. Now, this is a narrative I like. Villa linked to Philip Coutinho. I want that. I'm quite satisfied with that, although it does sound like there's 4 or 5 other Premier League teams in for him.
I think you're gonna be
surprised, Steve. I really do. I think you're underestimating the relationship with Steven Gerrard. I can see
there's
this.
There's a great tweet during the rounds of Villa fans saying all Villa fans right now, and it's the video of Jack Grealish as he's pulling into the Man City training ground for the first time saying where's Felipe, which I absolutely love. I mean, Coutinho would be an interesting signing. You know, quite clearly in terms of pure footballing talent, he would be an unbelievable get for Villa. Has he performed at that level in recent years? Not really. Do you necessarily need him when you already have a player in Emiliano Buendia, who is your own player, and in the last couple of weeks is really starting to show the kind of form that I think Villa fans were expecting when he arrived at the club. I don't know. Do you want to make a short-term loan signing that's going to stunt the progress of your own player, who, in my opinion, certainly has the capability of going on to have a career that isn't too far off what Coutinho's managed? I'm not necessarily sure, but I can understand why Villa fans are excited. It is a statement of intent. His relationship with Steven Gerrard means that maybe, and given, you know, the wealth of Villa's owners, I guess if they pulled off this loan coup and he had a good second half of the season, it wouldn't be beyond the realms that he could be a Villa player next season as well on a permanent deal. So it's exciting. It would certainly fill a gap that was left in the summer. And you know, as a statement signing, it would be pretty impressive, and it would be good to have him back in the Premier League. Even if he does, I would say, shoot far too often, and I think as a Villa fan, you know, some of those who are excited now might get frustrated about the constant pulling of the trigger from 35 yards. But certainly in terms of talent, he's a great player, and it would be exciting to have him back in the Premier League.
Yeah, today, Villa, like we discussed with West Ham, I encourage a cup run. I think from what Steven Gerrard said, he's going to go all in for the FA Cup, because we're not going to go down. Famous last words, but we're hopefully not going to go down. We know we're probably not going to get into Europe. Let's have a good crack at the FA Cup.
Unfortunately, Dan, you're not going to go down. Now, you wouldn't have thought so, looking at the odds. 33-1 for the drop, 20-1 for the top six, 5-4 for a top half finish. Last cup final I went to was 2015. I don't know if you remember it. Arsenal, 4-0. That was enjoyable. But what a great chance for Villa to go for it this year, and what a better place to do it than at Old Trafford. And I'm sure Steven Gerrard will know and will be up, massively up for this game as well, and I'm sure we'll see a strong Villa side going out there, and I can see Villa actually winning this game and going through to the next round.
Villa, of course, have already won at Old Trafford this season, winning 1-0 earlier on in 2021 this season. George, have you got a tip for this one?
Yeah, I think you've got about Villa at 9-2. Because of what's going on at United, because it could get pretty toxic quite quickly if things don't start the way they want, because we've seen Wolves, Burnley and other sides in the last couple of weeks able to create plenty of chances against United. You know, we are talking about a game here where just a couple of days ago, Wolves were quite clearly the better side against Manchester United. There's not a great deal in my mind between Wolves and Aston Villa, yet you're getting 9-2 about the same thing happening. So, you know, it might be proven wrong, but in a cup game where you know that Villa are going to look to attack at any possibility, and with question marks around key players, you know, especially with the talk coming out of Manchester United this week around players not being happy about the manager, there could be a few shocks in the team selection as well. So I think Villa are a bit of a must bet here at 9-2.
Thank you very much, George. Just enough time for me to remind you that if for some reason you're not a subscriber to The Athletic and you would like to change that, head to theathletic.com/footballpod and you will gain full access to all the brilliant articles as well as ad-free podcasts for just £3.33 a month for an entire year. That's theathletic.com/footballpod. And with the January transfer window open again, The Athletic are recording daily transfer shows, bringing you exclusive news and insight on any deals from the best newsroom in the industry. The only place you can hear these podcasts is on The Athletic app or by subscribing to The Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. You can start a free trial today on that. My thanks goes to Steve and George and, of course, all of you for continuing to listen to us in 2022. Remember, hit that subscribe button so you never miss a show. You've been listening to the Athletic Football Podcast. Have a great weekend and enjoy the FA Cup third round.
The Athletic.